This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. Bit stiff today, Barry.
Yeah, because Mariana is on drugs today, so if the show goes a bit crazy, a bit haywire, you'll know what's happened.
I wanted to ask you about finessing, and how do you decide if you've got, I don't know, what, ace 10 on dummy and you've got king jack in your hand? How do you know which way to pick?
So it's always tricky when you've got a choice. Yeah. When you've got a choice, isn't that? Because yeah. When you've got a choice, some of the time you're going to get it wrong. But there's often a bit of a clue. Failing that, some people say they always finesse towards the window. Or,
window.
or they finesse through the person they don't like, that they don't want to lose to. But they're not necessarily recommended to work out, even if they make you feel better. So if there's a clue in the bidding, if one of the hands is shown a long suit in the bidding, then you should normally play the other hand to have the card in an outside suit that you're looking for. So if they've overcalled a spade and you're looking for the queen of diamonds, play the person that didn't overcall spades to have the queen of diamonds. Sometimes you won't get that clue, but you might, if it's an off suit, you might have a chance. You might maybe draw trumps first and you might be able to test another suit. And if you find out that one person's got less cards, it's all about the theory of vacant spaces, which is just a fancy way of saying if that hand's got three hearts and the other one's only got one, they've got two more places for that queen of diamonds to be. Yep. Does that make sense?
Sort of. Vacant spaces.
Yeah, it's called the theory of vacant spaces or something like that. So it's something that you use all the time. And just another little tip on finessing. There's an old saying that says eight ever, nine never. So if you've got nine in a suit, you don't finesse for the queen. You just bang down ace king. It's sort of not a bad theory if you have got nothing else to go on. But once again, if you find out that somebody's got a long suit, somebody's opened a weak two and hearts on your left, and you end up in four spades, and you're looking for the queen of trumps, and normally you just bang down ace king and say eight ever, nine never. If they've got six hearts on your left and one on your right, the odds strongly favour you finessing against the person on your right. Bang down the ace first, just in case there's a singleton queen, but then go over there and take a finesse. And you can blame Mariana in the Bridge Zone for bringing this up if it's wrong.
It is hard, eh?
It is, because nothing's right all the time, but we're just trying to be as right as often as we can.
Mm.
Once again, that's the theory of vacant places. I think I read somewhere, and I thought it was quite a good thing, when you've got nine cards in a suit and you're just missing the queen, you bang down ace-king if you have no clue as to how the distribution is. But if you've got any hint at all that somebody's got a shortage or a long suit or whatever, you know, use that theory of vacant places and take the finesse.
Okay.
Any excuse to think that the cards might not be breaking 2-2, go for that.
What about, I'm pretty sure I've heard people say that you finesse to the hand that holds two honours.
I don't think you're talking about finessing there. If you've got if you've got king, queen to four in one hand and ace fourth in the other, particularly if you've got like the nine and the eight or something, if you don't know anything about the other hands, you would play small to the hand with two honours just in case somebody shows out.
Right.
And you can still finesse either way sometimes if that happens. It shows up with a singleton. So that's a little bit about finessing. But the other thing is there are some hands where, let's say you've got king, jack, 9x in your hand.
Yep.
And you've got ace, 10x in dummy.
Yep.
You've got both the 10, the 9. You've got the ace, the king, the jack, 10, and the 9. You're only missing that blooming queen again. You could finesse either way. If it with no other information, I would usually play the high card from the short side first, because that enables you to pick up if the suit is 4-1 on your right rather than 4-2 on your right. But whereas if you go the other way, even if you've got ace 10 small and you play the king and then small to the 10, even if it's right, when you bang down the ace, the queen still isn't going to drop.
Right.
So,
okay.
It's a small advantage in that you can pick up a 4-1 break the other way, but not that way. if that makes sense.
It is tricky.
There's a lot to think about when you're declaring, Mariana. Sometimes it's easier just to defend.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Hi.
Mariana's not with us just at the moment, but a couple of questions. One, an oldie but a goodie, and the other one, I haven't told you about yet, so I don't know how you'll get on answering it. But anyway, the first one is, and it's the rule that changed, and half of us remember know it's changed and they don't know what it is. It's the revoke law, Julie. If you revoke and it's established and later on you figure it out, how many tricks do you lose and how do you figure it out?
Okay. It didn't change a lot. So the revoke law is that if you fail to follow suit, all right, you have revoked. Now, before your side plays to the next trick, you can correct the revoke. So if you're defending before either of you have played to the next trick, you can correct the revoke and you'll probably end up with a penalty card on the table, which is a different ruling, and I won't go into that at the moment. If you declare it, it's when you play from dummy or from your own hand. So that's when it happens. But after that, you're not thinking about it, and all of a sudden everyone realises, or they don't realise, as the case may be, and you have revoked. Now, I have a beginner's group, and the other day I went to the table, and the person who had revoked had four cards face up in front of her because she was sorting out where she'd revoked. And they were all very interested, and they were sorting out what had happened and what cards shouldn't have been played. And there were cards going around the place for Africa. Seriously, it's really clear. No one is allowed to touch anyone else's cards, which didn't happen, so that was a really big plus. No one is allowed to turn their cards face up after they have played them and turn them over, except before the next trigger's played to where they're checking maybe about had they revoked or whose lead it was. But you're not allowed to go back and turn up every second or third card trying to find where the revoke occurred. You call the director. You don't touch cards. You tell the director you think that a revoke has occurred, and your opponents may or may not agree with the director. The revoke may have occurred, so to determine whether it has or not. And even that doesn't have to be done if the revoke occurred more than one trick previously, because you keep playing to the end of the hand, call the director back, and they will make a ruling. The ruling is simple. If the person who revoked did not win the revoke trick, if their side won that trick or subsequent tricks, one trick is transferred. If the revoke player won the revoke trick and their side won subsequent tricks, two tricks are transferred. If after that has happened, if the non-offending side is still disadvantaged, that is not that you think that the revoke player should be penalised the trick, then the director will look at it to see if the revoke created the problem. And sometimes the result on the board may be changed to give equity to the non-offending side.
That would be something like if, say, declarer's running a long suit, which is winning, and then somebody revokes and end up with a winner in that suit and stop you from running
or
your suit.
They've kept a trump, and all of a sudden, at the end of the hand, they take three or four tricks in the suit that they've set up subsequent to the revoke. So there are times where it does make a difference. Now, everyone at the table, including dummy, can revoke. And for everyone at the table except dummy, the revoke law will be used, as I've just said. But if dummy revokes, dummy can, and dummy does revoke, you're going to look at restoring equity. Dummy can revoke is the really important thing about that. Okay? If you think there's been a revoke, you can call the director any time up until when the scores become final. That is normally half an hour after they are published. But when you call the director, clearly, the longer it takes you to decide there might have been a revoke, the harder it is going to be for anyone to have any idea about whether it happened or not. So obviously the difficulty will be that if the scores look like they're fair and reasonable, you're unlikely to get any recourse from the director after you've moved on to the next round.
Okay.
Well, yeah, they muck about with it, but really it has been that or similar for a very long time.
Okay. I've got a question from Mariana now, and this is a bit of an ugly one. So if you're playing a howl movement, and I know this shouldn't happen, but somebody sits in the wrong place, usually means that two pairs have sit in the wrong place.
Yep, it does. Mm-hmm.
They play a board. Is there any recovery, or should you just go and jump off a bridge somewhere?
No. When you go on, you can do it two ways if you're scoring. One is your scoring program, New Zealand Bridge, will allow you to change the pair numbers. So you can change the pair numbers on that board to the way they actually should be for the way that you sat. The other way is that you can look at the percentage result and do an adjustment. If neither pair have played the board and they are playing the right pair, but they are playing in the wrong direction, there actually is no problem whatsoever. You just have to do a bit of work with your scoring program to get the score put in appropriately. Get them to sit the right way as soon as you can, because it saves you a lot of hassle.
Nice. And you put them back for the next round where they're meant to be. Aren't they liable to meet somebody playing the same board they've already played? Or,
well, that's the thing. If they're playing a board out of order and things like that, then we hit the problem. If they started the board, they have to play it. That's the new law. But then you get them to where they should be. Hopefully you can get them to play all the boards. If you can't, and then you're going to have to muck about with the board that shouldn't have been played and has been played and all the resulting stuff about that, okay? Then you can warn them in a tone of voice that suggests very much about the way you feel about all of this, about what will happen the next time it happens. Patrick, you know, he's got movements where people go from A to Z to B to the middle of the alphabet and all over the place, so not so much now as he used to. And we had one pair that couldn't see any vacant seats anywhere in the room. And we used to have people that would look for a vacant seat and go and sit there, irrespective of where they were meant to go. I was working and I was doing the banking, and I walked past them at a cafe. And I said, "What are you doing here? Aren't you meant to be playing?" They not only didn't sit where they should have, they went and had a coffee at a cafe down the road.
It just makes me realise that being a director must be a constant source of joy.
Well, you have to have a good sense of humour, and you laugh a lot, mainly because you feel like crying, but, you know, you get there.
Okay, thank you, Julie.
Okay.
IPs start soon?
IPs starting on Friday night. Support your province. It's online this year, so there's no excuse. Everybody will be able to check in during the weekend to see how their province is going. Maybe they've got a favourite team. Maybe it's the open team or the intermediate team or the seniors team or the women's team. All of them.
So are your teams ready?
Our teams, the Waikato-based teams, are rearing to go. I know the intermediates had a practice on Real Bridge on Monday night. I don't think I'm revealing any secrets to the oppositions, am I, Mariana?
No.
System cards are all in. And we're as ready as we're ever going to be.
So let's talk about other tournaments. You've got the Hawke's Bay Christmas Cheer coming up, the Waiheke Island Restricted Pairs, and also the Waikato Christmas Party. You're not going to play the Christmas Party then?
Well, I can't play. I'm the open team. We've got non-playing captains for all our teams this year, which I think is a good idea, rather than having one person try to look after all of them.
Good.
So I don't know what the other provinces are doing, but it seems like a good idea to me. Usually you can get somebody to offer to do that job. It's not too onerous, and do it from home.
Oh, well, all the best to everybody. Funny I'll be story. Watching.
I've got a funny story for you.
I have you? Okay.
Yeah. This comes from Jenny's Friday morning group, where we get quite a few funny stories. People are allowed to ring up and put their hand up and ask for help if they have a hand. We never tell them to bid, but we try to help them work through. Anyway, this lady, they opened one spade ahead of her and she called Jenny over. She didn't quite know what to do. She had 9 hearts, Mariana.
Oh,
and
exciting.
It is pretty exciting. Jenny said, "What do you want to do?" And she said, "I want to bid them." He said, "Well, yeah, but what are you going to bid?" And she said, "What do you want to do?" And she said, "I want to go high." Jenny said, "Okay." Anyway, she got called away. And when she got back, she'd noticed that the bidding had gone one spade. And the lady, quite often you notice with the novices and people just learning, they're a bit timid with the bidding, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, they don't bid as much as they should. And sometimes they miss games and they don't, you know, they're all
very reluctant to go too high. But not this lady. She'd bid six hearts over one spade.
Oh!
I thought that was a gutsy bid. The next person didn't quite know what to do. So they passed. And six hearts went two or three off. And it was a great result, the lady with the hearts, because they had like six spades on the other way. So that lady, I don't know who she was, but I thought that was a very brave bid, six hearts, especially for a novice.
I want to go high. Wow.
I don't think Jenny quite envisaged she was going to go that high.
She probably thought maybe she'd bid three hearts instead of two hearts.
Yeah, or maybe even four hearts or five hearts. Well, yeah. Not even five. She was thinking, well, she's not going to go two. She'll probably go three or four. Mm. Didn't really think of six.
Yeah. Well, you know how sometimes we hear about people when you're taking the lessons and people start playing in the room, they say, oh, no. Mariana said you can do that. Or Barry said you're allowed to do that. My funny story was I was playing with one of the people from that novice group or the NC group. So dealer was south and they passed and it came to my, and he doubled and had a little chuckle. It's like, you can't do that. But that man next door said he can. When you don't know what to do and you want your partner to say something, you double. And he was referring to maybe the 5-minute chat that you had. Now, this would have been what, Friday? Not Friday gone, the Friday before. And I was like, funny how that. And I said, oh, you probably got the end bit. You didn't get the beginning.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a phrase that I've used, which is, if you don't know what to do, double. At least you'll probably get another chance at not knowing what to do next round.
They're funny, aren't they? Mariana said that you do that, you know, when we're talking about reversing and bidding your suits up the line. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they forget the important bits behind it. But like you say, you're speaking away there and they're only taking in the last bit that you said. What? Don't worry about how you started the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. I always say to them, if you can take one thing away with you that you use, it's a good thing. But quite often the one thing that they take away actually isn't what you meant at all, which isn't quite so good.
Oh, funny. I've seen a hand played 2 weeks ago. My partner was playing and we get to it was about the 11th trick. And I could see that he had one card less than I had in my hand. And I looked at the opponents and they had the same number of cards in their hands that I did. So my partner, who was the clearer, was one card short. So I looked on the table and I was like, whose is that card? They were like, oh, not mine. And picked it up and he had played throughout the whole up to the 11th trick without the ace of clubs, which was on the table. And I was like, did you not? And he says, oh, I've never seen that card before. He said I would have been able to add it in and do something. But how often do you get that? Your partner as the clearer leaves the ace of clubs. And it was face down, so he thought it was maybe the opposition's card. It was actually his. Amazing.
Yeah, the tricky part in that situation is figuring out whether he's revoked or not during the play.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, God. Hilarious.
How many rounds of clubs have been played in him, and did he follow suit to them all? Director's nightmare trying to figure out that sort of thing.
G'day, it's Pete here, and today I wanted to discuss what is the best signalling method to actually use. So today what I wanted to do is go through and break down a few different signalling methods, just explain what they actually are, and then look at sort of what world champions do and a breakdown of that. And also an interesting idea that I think you might be asking the wrong question, or where that some depth is actually needed. And I'll actually touch on that later. And then also a method that might not be the best, but I reckon is a great way to actually improve your play. So let's jump in and look at how a few different methods actually work. So a couple of very common methods are you might be playing high encourage or low encourage. So what does signaling actually mean? This is distinct from what you actually lead. Signaling is all about when your partner or someone else has led to a trick, and you don't really care which card you play. You're not forced to play something. And you're going to be choosing between your low cards, your twos through tens, the cards that aren't going to be that relevant here. In this example here, imagine you've got King 9-6-2 and partner's led an ace. So what do we actually do? Like, we could play the 9, the 6, or the 2. Which one should we play, and how can we actually convey information with that? So depending on which signaling method you and your partnership actually agree on, you convey different information. So if you play low in courage, you could put the 2 on this to say, hey, I actually like this suit. Or if you and your partner played high in courage, you might put the 9 on to say, yeah, I like this, keep going, I actually really like it. So that's what you'd do if you really like the suits. If you don't like it, and say we took that king away, now we'd swap that around. If you're playing low in courage, you'd play a high card to discourage. So you'd put the 9 on to say, I'm not a big fan of this suit. Whereas if you played high in courage, now you'd be putting the 2 on instead. Signaling is all about when you're being led to, whether it's declarer or your partner, not when you're on lead. Leading is a separate situation that we're not covering today. Two common ways are high and low in courage, but there are more. Next, we'll look at count signal. You might hear of reverse count or natural count, and these are all about conveying how many you've got in the suit. Not whether you've got the ace, king, queen, jack, whether you like it or not, but do we have an even amount or do we have an odd amount? If you're playing reverse count, if you start by playing a low card, you're saying you have an even amount of cards. Here, the 2 would convey to partner you've got 2 or 4 or 6 cards. If instead you played natural count, you'd put on the 9 here. And playing a high card would say you've got 2, 4, 6 cards. Nothing about the king if you're giving a count signal. All about what sort of length you've got in the suit. And you're breaking it down to, do you have an even amount or an odd amount? If we changed it and now we only had 3 cards, if you played reverse count, you would be playing the 9 here. And if you're playing natural count, you'd be playing the 2 to say, I have an odd amount, 1, 3, 5. These are a couple of common signaling methods. They're also known by lots of different names. When we go into a bit more detail later, and I'll cover a few more, I'll talk about a few different names that signaling's made from, because they haven't made it confusing enough. Next, I wanted to show you what a World Championship system card looks like, and then talk about what actual signals they've got. We'll actually take a look at a system card. I know, it's a lot to take in. What is that? So I'll bring it back up. I should have given you more warning. These things are awful to look at, and you should be thankful that wherever you play, your system cards look better than this. But we'll bring it back up. We'll zoom in on signals. It's an interesting thing about the different approach there. So here, if we just zoom in on signals in order of priority. So here, what we've actually got is, rather than just saying, hey, I play low in courage, or I give natural count, or whatever it is, what you've actually got is you've got this priority of signals. Lots of world championship players use combinations of signals. It's not just one or other, the other. They actually choose various signals for different situations. So as you can see here, we've got signals in order of priority, and it talks about partner's lead, declarer's lead, and discarding. There are distinct situations for all three of these. But also, there's what's your main priority, what's your secondary priority, and what's your third priority. And then they also split it off into suits and no trumps. So not every pair has variation there. This one that we're looking at has the exact same. Other pairs break it up a bit more. And then also, if you look under that to other signals, what they've got is, well, when trumps are played, we give suit preference. And then it also talks about a bit of when does their situation change from the top priority to something else. So here you see if there's a singleton or void in the dummy, maybe they change what their signal is. Rather than just saying what signaling method should we use, it's important to understand that you actually want to be able to use a combination of these and have discussions with your partnership. When do they apply? What are we showing? And adding more depth into this rather than this system is better than that system. It's using a bit of a combination of it and having details of when these actually apply. And so I'll put that away because they're tough to look at.
We'll pick up the rest of Pete Holland's segment next week.
I understand that you've been elected president for another year of the Hamilton Bridge Club.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a parallel, actually, Mariana. I was reading today about the new president in Argentina, and his name is Loco. And I thought, oh, yeah, a bit like the president of the Hamilton Bridge Club.
Thanks, Barry. Loco, oh, my gosh. Yeah, another year.
So anyway, they had bridge afterwards. I see they had something like 8 tables.
So with the IPs happening this weekend, Barry, what's the name of the trophy that they're playing for?
The Dougal McLean Trophy. He was a very well-known New Zealand bridge player from Wellington, I think, pretty sure. And appropriately enough, the Wellington region have got a particularly good record in the Dougal McLean, and I'm sure they'll be out to win it again this year. So that basically that works is all the provinces have a team in each of the 4 divisions, and there's some sort of points method where if you win, you get 7 points, second, you get 6. That probably isn't how it works. And they add them all together from all of the 4 teams for each province. And the winner gets to hold the Dougal McLean Trophy for another year. And Wellington have won it. I don't know how many times, but it's probably at least 3, I would imagine. And Waikato Bays have never won it. In fact, most of the provinces have never won it. I think maybe Auckland's won it. Wellington's won it, and I'm not too sure about anybody else, but maybe somebody new will get a turn this year.
Maybe. But the intermediate team seems strong enough.
The intermediate teams is always tough to gauge who's got the best intermediate team when you look at the players, because a lot of them are maybe not as well known as some of the others. When you look at the
other, who's
the
other, in our open team?
The Waikato Bay's open team. It's got the Simpsons, the Fishers, and Richard Solomon and Anakama. Not a bad team.
Pretty good team.
That's the open team. But the intermediates, you know, obviously their points count for exactly the same as the other teams do. So, you know, it's really important to have a good intermediate team. And you know, it has been something where Waikato Bays has struggled a bit in the past. But hey, maybe this year we'll be there.
Yeah, that'll be nice. Okay, famous last words from me is good luck to everybody that's doing IPs. It'll be nice to be able to kibitz and watch a little bit.
Yeah, and my tip is do that. Go on there. There should be a link on NZ Bridge. You can go in there. You can watch people that you know from your region. You can see how they're doing. Bit of entertainment. And it's free.
All righty then. That's it for this week. I shall see you at the tables, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Not too much bridge on for some of us for the rest of the year. Maybe I'll get along to the club for some summer bridge one night.
Will do. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.